This is Steve Schrock on another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with candidate for Board of Health, Bridget Sweet. This is one of a series of conversations with candidates for the Franklin election on November 2nd, 2021. I do this to provide Franklin Mass voters with accurate and timely information that they can use to cast an informed vote. Publication of the answers or interview responses does not constitute an endorsement of this or any other candidate. We cover the candidate questions as previously developed in conjunction with the community and shared with the candidates in advance. Five of the questions are general in nature. The sixth is specific to the role of the candidate, in this case, for the Board of Health. Our conversation runs about 35 minutes, so let's listen to my interview with Bridget Sweet. Steve Furlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet and within your browser at WFPR.FM. And in the local Franklin area FM dial on the 102.9. Here for another candidate interview session, and this time for the Board of Health with Bridget Sweet. Bridget, good day and welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So you don't have any competition, which that's another story. We won't go there. But for folks who at least want to know, if they don't already, who is Bridget? Why is she running for Board of Health? Briefly, let's cover your Franklin story. Tell us a little bit about your life here.
Sure. So I moved to Franklin 8.5 or so years ago, originally from Boston. I have four boys that range from 12 to 20. So my oldest is a junior in college and my youngest is in seventh grade. And I love Franklin. I love the community. And my background is primarily in public health and food safety. And 4 years ago, I decided to run for the Board of Health because I wanted to give back to the community in a greater capacity. And 4 years ago, I did win the seat, and I've been on the board for the past 4 years, and I do like it. The past almost 2 years have been a little bit of a struggle, but I think it's important, and I think that my background in public health is uniquely formatted to support the health department, not be the health department, but to support the staff and the community in that capacity. So I wanted to run again and help support the community as best I can. And I'm also very actively involved with youth sports. I'm also the president of the Franklin Youth Lacrosse program as well. So try to be active as best I can and really to support the community in any role that I can while working full-time. My full-time life is at Johnson & Wales University. So I'm the executive director of food safety here in Providence.
For the Franklin voters to recall and remind, clearly while the town has an election every 2 years, there are seats that are two-year seats and there are seats that are four-year seats. So Bridget happens to be at the Board of Health. So there is a rotation amongst the three candidates so that they're staggered, so that not everybody gets reelected all at once, to maintain some of that institutional knowledge. At some point in time, that'll be a discussion to bring to the town council and school committee for likely a charter change in order to make that happen. But yeah, that's a topic for another discussion.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I think too, the challenge is that the Board of Health is a three-member board. And the Board of Health has some statutes that are from that are state mandated statutes that the health department has to enforce. And the Board of Health is a totally different beast with mandates, and it can be really, really hairy. Some towns have more restrictive rules than others, and there are 351 health departments across the state of Massachusetts, and everyone can have a more restrictive home rule. So there can be a lot of confusion in Board of Health land, if you will. It's very, very fortunate that we have sort of that rotation for that institutional knowledge piece to remain in place.
Thank you for that. And as we're gearing up for the election in November, participating in elections is one of the key freedoms of American life, and voting is just one of the primary responsibilities of citizens. While the law does not require citizens to vote, voting is an important part of any democracy. So what can you tell us about your own voting record? And if you've not been an active voter, can you explain why? And how, really, the question we're getting at is, should we elect people who are active participants in the election process?
I think that I vote. I vote often. I vote regularly. But I don't know that we should shame or judge people who may not vote. I think everyone has their own historical perspective or rationale as to why they may not have voted. People come from different communities, cities, where maybe they thought their vote didn't matter. I think we need to do a better job with education as to why every vote does matter. You know, growing up in the city, voting was something that my family thought was really important. My parents dragged us to all the elections. I remember voting in Dorchester, not voting myself, obviously, but going with my mom to a nursing home and my dad to the nursing home to do their votes at Marion Manor in Dorchester for their votes, or hanging signs with my dad. He was a very, very active supporter of certain politicians in the city of Boston. So I think it's important, but I think that rather than judging people who may have a different voting history, we educate more as to why voting is important. And I understand why we want to elect someone who may have a more robust voting history, but I think maybe we just move forward. So it's that continuous improvement model. So maybe 4 years ago, we only had an 8% turnout for certain elections. Now we want to have 12%. We can kind of continue to move that needle forward and keep driving up that local election turnout. We'll all win in the end. But I think it's really hard to use a negative connotation with that. But I think voting is important to the point where my oldest son was actually involved in Boy State League, where it was really important for him to be. I thought it was really cool that he got to participate in that in 2019, right before sort of all those programs stopped because of COVID. But he got to really see a lot of that civics and engagement and really understand a lot more than I think my younger three see now, kind of in high school and middle school. So I just think we need to do a better job with our younger generation and really educate what that vote truly means and really help everyone understand what local politics means. Because I think that's, people are so worried about the every 4 year federal elections. We often forget how important these local elections and what does municipal government really do. I don't think a lot of people really understand that. And how does municipal government differ with a town charter, and how do town charters differ, and how do all of those languages speak to each other? And I think that it's a difficult subject to overcome. I think it's really important for that community engagement, and every community is different, but I think we need to do a better job of that overall, because that will just make us more informed voters in the end. So I think we need to fix that piece first before we worry about who's voting for who.
Thank you for that. And you touched on some of the aspects of the next question, but certainly you've lived a better part of the last 2 years. You already mentioned in this pandemic health crisis that we've had. So one of the key questions out there is, have you been vaccinated for COVID-19? Do you think there should be a mask mandate if it comes to it in Franklin? And finally, I think this is where the delineation is amongst the government to protect the public from the virus and whatever else is coming. And how should these efforts be delineated between local, state, and federal governments? A mouthful, but that's what it is.
loaded question. So let's go like sideways, then up and down, kind of all around. So my background is in public health professionally. I got my master's in food safety. And this past year, I got my doctorate in law and policy, where a lot of my law and policy research was either centered around food policy or local policy, which is kind of touching, right? Because I work in local policy, sort of. But yes, I've been vaccinated. My entire family has been vaccinated. Immediate, my children have been vaccinated. My in-law, you know, everyone in my immediate family has been vaccinated. To the point where my youngest just turned 12 in July. He's been fully vaccinated for quite some time. It was really important to me to protect not only him, but my mother-in-law is immunocompromised. My mom is immunocompromised. So really to get them to understand the importance of other protection as well. My 14-year-old is a little bit leery of the vaccine still. He'll tell me that I don't know the health impacts that it may have on him. You know, 5 years from now, we have the conversation of, we don't know what COVID may have done to him 10 years from now. So he also understands the importance of protecting his Nana and his grandmother. So it's a weird conversation sometimes. And then speaking to the fact that we've always had vaccines in place. So mandatory vaccine is not necessarily new. This vaccine is not necessarily new. mRNA vaccines have been along for a long time. I just think in the past 12 to 18 years, vaccines in general have become more politicized. So it's a different sort of tone, which is sort of a challenge. But we want to protect public health in the greater majority of people. As far as a vaccine mandate, I will go on the record and state that I was a proponent, and I wrote in support of, and I was one of the rational, that my writings were in very much support of Johnson & Wales for us to have a vaccine mandate for our students, as well as for our faculty and staff at Johnson & Wales, because we are a culinary. In my program in particular is culinary. So we're in a laboratory for 6 hours a day. We're in close quarters, and we're also a residential facility. So there are a lot of different competing priorities here that have additional risk factors. So that was a little bit different. For a mask mandate at this current moment in time in Franklin, no. Does that mean that 2 weeks from now, the answer is still no? No, I don't know. I think that's something that needs to be viewed as on a regular basis. It's something that I, as an individual, obviously can't make that decision. It's something that the whole board would have to meet on and have a very much data-driven discussion with information from the town administrator, information from other physicians, information from our case count. You know, we are one community. And I think part of the challenge with some of the local statute is that COVID doesn't know zip codes, right? So if we have a mask mandate, but you live in Rentham or you live in Medway and they don't, COVID's not gonna know where we're at. But if regionally we're all lower in numbers, does it make sense for us to have a mask mandate? No. Can we have a general mask advisory and recommend? Yes. And if you feel like you wanna wear a mask, hey, all the power to you. Do I wear a mask? If it makes some people more comfortable, absolutely. Do I have to wear a mask at work? Yes, I do. Which is fine. You know, I think right now we're not there yet, but does that mean that we may not revert to that? No. I do think that there is no federal authority for there to be a mask mandate just based on the way the provisions of the state constitutions, et cetera, are written. There can be a very strong, again, advisory or recommendation, but that would really be driven on, you know, Governor Baker's authority. And do I wish that some of the states, sometimes I wish you'd make a decision faster as a local person? Yes. The school decision was quite problematic because, again, COVID doesn't know zip codes. And the way that the state has been relaying information has changed. So remember a year ago, we were going green, yellow, red, purple,
right.
4% positivity, 10% positivity. We were just varying. The data points were changing. So people's understanding keeps changing. And it's just hard when you go from a county to a community to this to that. So it's very, very inconsistent. So it's a very, very mixed message, and it's confusing. And if it's confusing to people who are in the profession, what does that mean to your family? What does that mean to the general, you know, business person? I got a phone call and someone was very, 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 very angry with me because I didn't understand the science that I wouldn't enforce a mask mandate in restaurants because people are breathing on the food. Did people not breathe on food before COVID? And this is some of the, totally not being tongue in cheek, but the food code is written like, this is an example. This is the food code. Look at this book. These are all the rules that people who want to serve food have to follow. The food code is based on science. Yes, they shouldn't be, you know, there are other rules they're following, but the mask is only for COVID. They're already not supposed to be working if they're sick. The mask is to protect people from people, not food from people. So there's just so much still misinformation, and I don't know how we bridge that gap. But the short answer to your question is, yes, I was vaccinated. I do believe there are certain instances where vaccines should be highly encouraged, if not mandatory, like boarding situations, et cetera. I don't think that I would you know, I don't believe in like a vaccine passport per se, but that's, and I also don't think currently right now, October 12th, 2021, that we have a need to have an emergency Board of Health meeting for a mask mandate. But again, if that decision were to come, it wouldn't be made in a vacuum. It wouldn't be a Bridget Sweet Board of Health decision. It would be a Board of Health, Public Health Director. It would be Town Council. It would be a community. It would be an open meeting. And we would hear testimony on both sides. But at the end of the day, right, wrong, or, you know, it would be to protect public health. It's really the end of the game. End of the day. And I think, Steve, I think that we brought up this example once before, or maybe just in passing. People are very, very quick to give up peanuts and peanut butter to protect the larger group of children from peanut allergies, but they're not so quick to put a mask on. So it just seems to be like a weird, like a false equivalency, but it's kind of similar. So I know it's, I think people are more angry about the, you know, the 2 weeks or the short period of time. And I totally get that. I'm not in love, you know, I work in these kitchens. I don't love teaching in a mask either. But if it's going to keep my kid in school, I'm going to keep the mask on.
Yeah. I think the key piece, the only piece I would add to that is peanuts. Certainly you can see the virus in its current form. You can't see it's airborne. So how do you know to avoid it?
You have no idea. No, and that's, and I think that's, yeah, you're right. Absolutely, sir.
Yeah. So stepping into kind of the broader view and give you an opportunity to step outside your kind of Board of Health role, what three important actions do you think Franklin needs to move forward?
I think Franklin is the best community ever. I think we have a lot of great, we have great programs. I think we do need a little bit more education in a couple of different areas. I do think that given social media presence, and I think the pandemic has probably helped. The pandemic has done a great job in bringing people to some of the public forum discussions that are, you know, open meetings, things like that. But I think it has given a false equivalency as to how that public meeting is run. So maybe having some sort of either a civics or a civics 101 or a local engagement session, that just because something is an open meeting doesn't mean that it's a public debate. So the whole point of an open meeting is to make sure that it's conducted properly, it's in an open session, that there's no private deliberation, et cetera. And yes, there may be a time for public comment, but it doesn't always mean that someone may be afforded 15 minutes to share their side of their, you know, their opinion. So maybe just some general education would be really helpful. I'm super excited that the health department has made some strides in collaborating with the Metacomet Public Health Commission. So we're moving forward with public, we hired a public health nurse, which we've been lacking for quite some time. So we've always been under, historically, public health departments are underfunded, and we've always used the VNA in Franklin. And we're a pretty substantial size community. I mean, over 30,000 people is not a small community. Yeah. And we've always contracted out with the VNA, which is fine, kind of worked, right? Kind of worked. But during a pandemic, not so much. So we've hired a full-time public health nurse, and she's actually going to be working and giving us a heart healthy community designation, hopefully, and really doing a lot more community outreach and working with our seniors and with our veterans and really trying to grow some of those programs. We need to do a little bit more public health wise outside that state mandate, outside of just the, we need to do more prevention and not just reaction. So we do inspection. Well, not we, the department does inspections. Great. But what else can we do that's preventative? How else can we support the community holistically and really try to create a healthier community from the ground up? And I would love, 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 love for us as a community to be a little bit more forward thinking with food. And it's something that Kathleen and I have talked about. Kathleen is the health director, and we're working with an intern and really creating a program that will divert food waste and repurposing it or diverting it to families in need. Food waste is a huge problem across the country. It's a challenge both in homes and in operations/restaurants. And what can we do to re-educate people to either repurpose, divert, reuse, or donate? You know, we have a huge misconception with expiration dates. So how do we educate consumers that just because this date says this doesn't mean to throw it away on that date? So a lot of education and outreach. I know it's a little bit more public health focused, but that's my lens. That's what I like. education. And I guess really all of those topics we sort of covered under those that subheading are still education related, but I think it's important. We need to do better, but we need to do better collectively and just sort of continue that continuous improvement. And I think as we continue these efficiencies, we'll just do better and be better and just kind of bring the community out. We have a lot of great programs. We have a lot of great people. We have a lot of great different people. And if we can just kind of keep building everybody out, we'll be better.
Thank you for that. And Chloe, I'll continue to help Kathleen and your board by sharing the recordings of the board meetings, by sharing Kathleen's got her own monthly audio recording podcast. Now she's developing the new The Topic to get into those other broader health discussions, because as we've discussed in other places, and certainly I think we're both aligned to that, health comes first before you do any business. And to the more we can, to your point, get education and a proper discussion around what's real, how do we do this, what can we consider? And then, yeah, knowing Franklin's circumstances, we can't do everything today. But if we start taking the steps to go where we need to go, then we'll eventually get there.
And I do want to say that I think the great thing about Franklin is that people want to do better. Like, we are so fortunate that, you know, we have great rec programs. We have great community outreach. We have a great food pantry. We have great programs, and they're always looking at how else to kind of be better and really collectively collaborate and network and see what else, you know, culturally, what else can we do to be better? And I think that health departments in general have, Massachusetts is a different model. So that's part of the challenge of the health department is, every state sort of follows a different model of inspections and enforcement. And Massachusetts generally is more of an enforcement mechanism. So, you know, it's more, all of the pillars that we follow are more about protecting public health through enforcement. And there are other states that really do that whole preventative healthcare model, where a lot of their programs focus on maternal fetal medicine. They'll do a lot more outreach for substance abuse. They do a lot more for diabetes outreach. They do a lot more for just a lot more outreach. And I think the benefit of having Kathleen on board when she's, you know, she started just before the pandemic is that she thinks that way as well. And her partnership with Worcester State allows us to have the straightforward Massachusetts inspection mandate in place, where we still do the minimum, but we're also going above and beyond, and we're looking beyond those borders. So the program that Kathleen's doing now with the veterans, looking at some of these food resources, we're doing great things, and maybe, you know, they're new, they're infant, but they'll be better. And as we continue to grow and collaborate and work with other types of community partners, all we can do is, again, just be better. And that's all we want, right? And healthy.
Yep.
You know, if we have a healthier population through more stable food, create our own, you know, suburban gardens, things of that nature, we'll just be better for it.
Thank you for that. And moving more specifically into the background and experience, and I think you've alluded to that somewhat in your first question, or the answer to the first question, but for also to remind our listeners, if you're new to this, welcome. And enjoy this episode and then come back for more. And for the regulars, you're familiar that we've had 5 standard questions for the candidates, and we'll also get to a 6th specific for the role. But in this particular case, what background or experience do you have that would help you serve in this particular role of the Board of Health? Another way to phrase it is, what do you bring to the table that would help, that potentially would set you apart from others? Although in this case as well, we know you're not competing against them because nobody stepped up.
Let me tell you, I was worried. So been the chair for the past 2.5 years of the current board. I was elected 4 years ago, November. But prior to that, I've been in public health in some capacity for almost, a long time. 16. So I graduated with my bachelor's of science from Massachusetts Maritime Academy, where I did a little bit of chemistry. And then I worked for environmental public health as public health officer for Harvard. I worked for the city of Taunton as environmental or as a sanitarian, town of Sharon as public health, Whole Foods, global food safety. So all sort of public health related. And then I've been at Johnson & Wales for a little over 6 years, global food safety. But I get to play in the public health sandbox here as well, which is quite fun. And since I've been at Johnson & Wales, I've got my master's of science in food safety from Michigan State, as well as completed my doctorate in law and policy at Northeastern. And I've also had the pleasure of launching and writing curriculum for our master's of science in our online program. I'm also the interim director of culinary, the Ecolab Center of Culinary Science here at Johnson & Wales as well. So I work really closely with our regulatory, both here in Massachusetts and in Rhode Island, doing a lot of trainings for food safety to our inspectors and what they're looking for as well, which is really fun because I get to put on my inspector hat and my like teaching hat. But it's just really fun. But the biggest challenge for me has always been I've had some different types of boards. So really just trying to be supportive. Just because I was an inspector doesn't mean that's my role here in Franklin. So making sure that I know my role and really just trying to be a really good support system for the office staff. And I'm just so thrilled that a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, you know, David was great. He was a great health director. We were so fortunate to have Kathleen step in. We were lucky to hire Kathleen about 2 years ago. Ginny is a great inspector. Now we have a full-time public health nurse, and we've also started the Medicom Public Health Alliance with Wrentham in Norfolk, which is huge because through this alliance, we got grant funding. Super cool. Means that we're not paying for it. And it really gives us an increased capacity to have another inspector come in, and he's also well qualified. He's a registered sanitarian, so he works with all three towns to do housing and food inspections and really just make sure that we can still continue on some of these public health promotional outreaches, as well as still do our minimum standards for inspections. And I like the policy piece, and I want to be a resource. I want us to be a healthy, qualified town. I want us to be a healthy community. I want us to be a pillar. I don't want us to be a community that, you know, other boards of health look at and I'm like, oh, they're a hot mess. I want us to be like top dog and very competitive, by the way. I guess you could tell.
Yeah, just a little. Nothing wrong with competition. That was brings out the best of all of us. And then the final question: in your board of health role, your oversight of the health department has clearly been in the forefront during this COVID period. How do you reflect on the operation of the health department in responding to this challenge? Would you do anything different?
I don't know. I think the challenge, and I think I've said this in like the voter guide response as well, I can't be unbiased. I think the greatest challenge for the health department staff, because again, we're just policy. So we try to support Kathleen. You know, I'm so fortunate that Jeff and Tim are very level-headed as well. And if Kathleen needed a meeting, we would meet. You know, we really just wanted to be a support system for her. I'm also very fortunate that Jeff and Tim don't have agendas of their own. I've worked with other boards. Again, I've worked for other communities. There can be a lot of contention between different board members, different personalities, but I have a great, I work, not that I haven't been voted in yet, but up until this point, I have a great team. We work really well together. And we just really, our goal is to review policy, revise regulations, and support the health department. And I think we've done a good job with that. We've worked to remove regulations that have been in place that are no longer effective, that have been outdated. We want to, you know, we've worked to make sure that regulations that are standing are make sense. And when COVID regulations needed to be revised or updated, we worked to make sure that happened. I worked with the sports teams to write, actually I met with all the sports teams to help them write their regulations. I met with Glenn Jones and other businesses to help them write their standards. Kathleen and I did trainings with Anne Marie just to make sure that businesses could reopen and understand what that meant. So I think we We just tried to be proactive in as much as we could. Created flyers for restaurants when the bars were going to reopen, what that standard meant. Because what we were finding is before that standard was crafted, people were building plexiglass shields that didn't meet the standard, spending all this money, and then being told they couldn't operate. How horrible was that? So I think that as a board, we did a good job. I mean, as good of a job as we could have with the information we were given. I think the challenge lies in the fact that for Kathleen and Ginny and Tyler and Melissa, the challenge came that they got the information at, say, 9 o'clock on Tuesday or 9 o'clock on Friday in the morning, and the press release would go out at 10 a.m. So they didn't have time to really filter through the information. So I think as in a support role, we did the best we could. Could we do more? I think so. I think in hindsight, there's always more we could do. I think that the other challenge is that industries or businesses that were never part of a Board of Health purview now became part of the Board of Health umbrella. So if you were a barbershop, if you were a regular business, if you were an office, if you were, I don't know, I can't even think of that, if you were a manufacturing facility, basically, if you did any type of business anywhere, now the Board of Health had some sort of auspice or control over you. That's a hard role as a health agent or a health director to walk into someone that you don't even have a single relationship with and be like, hey, I got to shut you down because the state said so. That's not awesome for her. And that's not awesome for the business. There's no relationship. At least if you've done inspections before, you know who the person in charge is, you know, you have some kind of relationship. And not to mention, keep in mind that during the height of the pandemic, these young ladies were going into places where they were having fatalities. So they're coming off these horrible inspections, dealing with some of that turmoil and some of that horrible aftermath of the phone calls. And it was just really, really hard on them emotionally. So I think, could we have done a better? I think we could have done a better job supporting Kathleen and Ginny in that capacity with their social and really with their like emotional well-being. But I don't think we realized how tough they had it till a month after the fact. When we started seeing the reports and going, oh my goodness, now they have manufacturing. Now they have this. Oh, they did all these inspections. And even if they didn't do an inspection, they're making those phone calls. How many phone calls can you make before someone yells at you 99 times? And you have to call the state in to help you. So I think it's one of those things where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I do think that unfortunately in the past 2 years have taught us a lot of what the state did wrong. So I think we can learn a lot from that. So I think that if we continue to sort of figure out what this new normal is, I would venture that a lot of our programming, a lot of our directives would be more educational based first. And we would make sure that we would do webinars or conversations, because I think that something like this, you know, some type of a conversation is a lot more beneficial than an email or a mailing or, hey, you have 3 days to figure this out.
Sure.
That would be, and I think we did that a little bit, but I think we needed to do a little bit more.
Yeah. And it was in hindsight, certainly it's always 2020, but yeah, things were moving so quickly. We really didn't have, you really didn't have that much time to react to it. We were always just,
every time,
what's the new message? Get the new message out.
Yes. And once we thought we had it figured out, like, oh, this makes sense. All right. I got, I mean, I can remember sitting down and going, all right, I know how to do the calculation myself for percent positivity. And I changed it. I was like, all right, wasn't a math major. Can't tell you anymore. So I think there was just so much. And it was just so, it really was demoralizing, especially for the staff, I think. Because at least for me, you know, I would get like random complaints, but I wasn't doing it day in and day out. And if I was, I still wasn't doing it like they were. So I felt, and I get it. I mean, I get the frustration. I get it. And I get when they had to call someone in quarantine with a kid for the third, like, I get it. And I get it from both sides. And I just felt, there were some days where I just felt so bad for everyone. It just isn't awesome. And I hope that we continue to go the right way.
Yeah. Get through this finally.
I hope so, because it's exhausting, yeah. As everyone knows.
Yep. So having covered the six questions, we covered a wealth of topics there, specifically in your area, specifically about you. Is there anything else you'd like to add for the voters to consider in advance of November 2nd?
No, I just think that it's important to remember that local health is severely underfunded and it's state mandated. So there are a lot of things that there aren't a lot of flexibility on. And there is a current measure in legislation to sort of expand that. It's called SAFE 2.0. But I do think that Franklin is very lucky to have the health department they have. And when public health is working, it's invisible. And as we know, COVID was very, very visible. And that was a pandemic, not a Franklin-demic, you know what I mean?
Yes, so, yeah, clearly emphasized pandemic, yes.
And I do think that they're trying and they will continue to try. So if anyone ever has any questions, the office only bites on Tuesdays. They'll always call you back. So they are a community resource. So I think sometimes two people are afraid to call, but comments, questions, concerns, they'll always call you back. And I will too. Even if you're
going to
yell at me.
Well, thank you for spending some time today. Have a good rest of the day.
Have a wonderful afternoon.
Yes. And for the listeners, thank you for participating. If you have any questions, the show notes will include contact info for Bridget and Department of Health, Board of Health, et cetera, and prepare to vote. And until the next time, this is Franklin Matters. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.